Welcome to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast, where we discuss all things money because whether or not we like it, money matters. I'm your host, Maya Fisher-French, and as September is Will's month, we're going to be talking about how to use a will to protect your child's legacy. Now, I don't know if it's because it's been Women's Month, but for some reason, I have had so many queries from mothers about how to protect their children financially should something happen to them. And I must just tell you, this is from not only from single mothers, but it's also from married women who say to me, Maya, I'm not sure my husband's going to make the right choices with my child's inheritance. So whether you are a mother or a father, you are probably going to want to make sure that your children are taken care of. So today, I have invited Alex Simonides, who is CEO of Capital Legacy, to help us parents navigate the complexity of estate planning. So welcome, Alex.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Alex, I mentioned in the introduction, the kind of questions I'm getting, but I've also picked up a sort of underlying theme. And that is that, people say to me, they say, Maya, if I pass away, I'm worried that my husband or my wife will remarry and my money will go to the new estate and it will land up in the hands of a new wife or new husband and not my children. Are you finding this as quite a key concern when people are writing up wills?
It is always the question one of our consultants will get after having done a will consultation. It normally happens on the phone, on their way back, driving back from the house. Listen, we didn't talk about something, but I'm worried about this. And it's a real risk, Maya. It's a real risk. But like everything, there is a solution. How we always advise it is to say, well, use this fabulous thing that you can do in terms of your will called a testamentary trust. And we call it a widow's trust. Put the money in there, into this trust, where you appoint trustees, and your spouse that you leave behind can draw on the income. The capital that remains can then go over to your kids or maybe a family relative that you specify now. This is the cleanest solution to the particular problem, because it can actually happen that, I leave everything to my spouse, I pass away, she remarries, and the money then gets all mixed up and washed. Mm. There are clauses in a will that will say, whatever you inherit can't form part of any new marital contract, which is great. But I think we all know the reality. People come together, they buy a house together, the money is going to come through. So I'd rather go one level up if that is a real concern for you and say, well, let's create this thing called a widow's trust, which is a form of a testamentary trust, and you can do it for free in your will.
And just to clarify, Alex, that is only for minor children. You can't do it for adult children. That would be a different, type of trust.
A testamentary trust can be used for any type of person. You can use a testamentary trust for children and put a termination age on it, say 23 or 21 or 18 or 25. And we call that a children's trust. You can use the testamentary trust to create a spouse's trust or widow's trust, which is what I just explained. You can use them to look after young adults or children with special needs, or even maybe a father or a mother who've got a gambling problem, but you need to look after them. Mm. So it's got a wide range of uses that you can. The point is how to use them, and that's why it's so important to get someone who does wills every day to say, well, no, I think this will work and I think this will work for you. So now you can use them for any purpose.
And I think it's also useful to understand the tax implications of bequeathing your assets into a testamentary trust, because maybe just unpack a little bit the abatement that you have. So there's a certain amount that you can, let's put it this way, the amount that you can leave to a beneficiary before you pay estate duty. Because I think that's one thing people don't realize, the amount of tax that hits you or your estate when you die. Very expensive to die. That's all I can tell you.
Well, I think what we must do, because everyone's very scared of estate duty, and rightfully so, it's real. But actually what we see as the biggest taxes that get paid are two other forms of taxes. The first is still a wealth tax, which is your capital gains tax at death. So remember, the revenue service deems you to have sold everything when you pass away. And that happens at rand zero. It doesn't have this abatement of 3.5 million or 7 million if you're using your spouse's. And the second is after you've inherited. The taxation that occurs on the interest income that's earned on the assets always, in a world where you're playing between 5 and 7 and 8, okay, maybe now a little bit higher, 8%, and then you're going to get whacked 40%. People don't take that into account. They do it in their financial needs analysis, but when you really are paying that that interest that that person needs to live off of, that money really hurts. So yeah, there is absolutely the inheritance tax, but how these trusts work, particularly if you are leaving it still to spouses, it still preserves it as if it's going to the spouse, so that everything is tax-free. I mean, I'm not using the technically correct phrase, but you can say it's tax-free. But anything that's going to go to kids, you know, at a technical level, you've got up to $3.5 million before estate duty bites. And then at the same time, if you've got assets like a business you founded and it's worth something, you can expect to have CGT on that.
And Alex, one of the things, you know, I was sort of, a woman came to me and she said, well, I don't know how to have this conversation with my husband. I don't want to tell him I don't trust him. And I said to her, how about using tax? People don't like paying tax. So if you say to him, you know what, let's ring fence, let's use my $3.5 million, you know, that I'm not going to pay estate duty on, and bequeath that to our children in a testamentary trust, wouldn't that be a really clever idea? And then the rest of the estate goes to you. I don't know if you can use the tax. That's sort of a thought.
I'm going to use it. That's some good selling there. I really like that one. Yeah, absolutely. I really like that. And you could probably even further it, because you could say, well, why don't you do the same for your 3.5? Come, let's do it together.
Absolutely. And you start to really, you know, talk about looking after the children rather than I don't trust you, which is obviously not a conversation you want to have if you have a happy marriage or don't plan on getting divorced quite soon, because that's not going to start off a very good conversation.
It's not people do, and they make this mistake, and I think we spoke about it in one of our previous podcasts, is the mom or the dad will then go take a life insurance policy and they'll make the children the beneficiaries. And that's not going to solve the problem, because their biological parent is still going to have control of the money if they're younger than 18. So if you are going to procure a life insurance policy, make sure you're doing a will with a trust and that policy pays the trust, because otherwise you've gone full circle and recreated
the problem. That's a very, very important point, actually. So if you have life cover that you are intending to leave your child, you should, and your child's a minor, so they're under 18, you should then make the testamentary trust the beneficiary or the estate. Is it the estate or the testamentary trust? How does that work?
I always say make it the estate, and then in the estate, say I leave 1 million to child one, 1 million to child two, whatever the case may be. Make it pay the estate. There's no questions asked.
Okay, so that is very important, because if it goes straight to the child's name and maybe the child's 10 years old, someone is going to manage that money on their behalf.
Like we said before, who was standing next to you when you were a child with your Bobsay Velcro blue wallet? Who was standing at that bank teller? It was your parent. That's the person who actually has control of your money if you're below the age of 18.
So very, yeah, very important. If you are concerned, that these are good tips. And then I had another very interesting question actually recently from someone who said, but if I, you know, should I leave, how in the case, right? So say, for example, you're married, that you know that the father or the mother will continue to look after the child. But in many cases, if you're a single mom, you're asking someone else to be the guardian of your child. It could be your mother, it could be your sister, it could be somebody else. Is it a good idea for them? Now, remember, you're leaving the life cover to the child in the testamentary trust. How do you make sure that that guardian now also has the additional funds that they will need to provide for the child? Because obviously the child's going to come at a greater expense.
So look, the operation of a testamentary trust, or in this particular case, a children's trust, it's all about the quality of the administration. So if you have a good trust administrator, that person will set out an annual budget. In that annual budget, it'll provide for the day-to-day, weekly, and monthly expenditure, groceries. We'll then ascertain, you'll ascertain what can be paid directly, like medical aid, school fees. But there's other things you need, like you said, for the guardian. And then there's some solutions. We'll either, if the child's like maybe 15 or 16 and they've gone through our financial literacy program, we may give them 2,000 or 3,000 rand, and then they need to give us slips, you know, like on a float system that you would do. Alternatively, we can do it with the guardian, and then again, we'll work on a float system. And then there's some new stuff, you know, you can actually start giving people a pre-funded credit card or pre-funded card that they could, you know, like you get these cards, you can go around, they can be swiped anywhere. So I don't, at all costs, I would prefer not to put the money directly in the guardian's hands. And as a guardian, I wouldn't want it either. My job is to care for the child, not the money of the child. But sometimes, means to an end, you need to, and then you just use a simple float system. I gave you 3,000, you give me back 3,000 expenses, I'll give you another 3,000, and so you go.
And I'm bringing you all my questions now because I've got the opportunity of all the people that have been asking me these things. The other one is they want to know how to protect their child's inheritance from a future marriage. So maybe you have an adult child, or it's a testamentary trust, and it obviously it dissolves one day when the child becomes an adult. But you don't want that child, if they're getting married, especially if they get married in community of property, for those assets to go into their communal estate. How do you prevent? Is there a way of protecting that inheritance?
So let's just go back to the first technical clause. Your will say that no beneficiary's inheritance can form part of a future marital contract. This is true even if it's passed through the testamentary trust and to the termination point.
But
But
you'd
like I
have to
said,
put that in your will. I mean, that is a clause you would have to include. It's not
it
standard.
never works in reality because how are you going to divide the money and see what's what? And it never really works in practicality. So what we always do with our beneficiaries is we encourage them. So we start them on a financial literacy program at a young age. And by the time they sort of get to 18, 19, 20, we start having a conversation with them around converting the testamentary trust or opening up a permanent or future living trust, inter vivos trust for technical correctness, where they can put this inheritance in there. And you say to them, you've lived with the trust, you understand how it works, you've taken out all the uncertainty, you've seen the benefits, and now things like marriage. Because the other thing, Maya, is that informs part of their estate for estate duty. So we educate them and say, well, why do you want to now have to do estate planning? It's everything's in trust. We can keep it in trust. And more often than not, we get them to convert them into trust permanently.
Well, I suppose there's pros and cons to that because, a testamentary trust is very important to understand, especially if it's for a minor. It has a different tax dispensation than an ordinary trust. So it would be taxed as an individual, as a person, whereas a trust has another whole level of taxation, which gets quite tricky if you're trying to buy property in that trust and things like that. So I suppose you need to weigh up the pros and cons of that.
Structuring it, if you're going to do it, you need some structuring with companies that would, we need to help them out with it. If it's at that level, that you need to be.
And if it's enough money, I mean, you may have left your child enough to get them into adulthood, and now there's just a few hundred thousand left over. It may not be worth keeping the trust. So I imagine all of those, you have to have those conversations. There's not always a what one one solution fits all.
It's interesting you actually said that. So we've got, Shane, they're very dear. So we've got two beneficiaries. They've come of age now, stand to be corrected, 21, 22. And they also only had a few hundred thousand. The financial planner has actually done really well. And they had a few hundred thousand. And what they opted to do is to preserve it because their point of view was that this few hundred can become something material. I'm going to go now and work. And I'm going to go and let this go and build and grow and keep it nice and separate. So that I can actually have a legacy from their lost their mom. I can actually have a legacy from mom that's something material. I've lived off it. I don't need it anymore. I'm working. So it's interesting that you say that because there's also that emotional money personality that comes into it.
Absolutely. And another really big one that comes with children, leaving legacy to your children is property. And we see a lot of people saying, parents saying, well, I want my child to have the family home. Oh, you've got to be careful. You've got to understand what you're doing when you bequeath actual physical property.
Yeah, so I would, it depends. So, in my experience, it's been a blessing in some cases where kids have got the home and we hold it in trust. And it's been an absolute nightmare other times. I think you've got to know, I think you're going to know the situation. Is the family home fraught with family politics? Is it fraught with a lot of maintenance? Because that's also been a, or is it something where the child or children can actually live in? And continue with, is it somewhere that we'd want to continue living in? A lot of the time, people want to just sell and go somewhere new. There's a lot of memories and so forth and so on. So I think to answer your question in an about way, Maya, I would say, what is your specific situation? It may be the right answer is to say to the executor, sell everything, put cash in the trust, or please preserve this particular property, look after it, upkeep it, paint it, pay its rates and taxes, and make sure it's there for them. To live in and or rent. I mean, we've even seen some becoming property speculators and to no good. I mean, they lost a lot of money, when. So I think it depends on the specific situation.
And also, you know exactly the point you're making, the maintenance and ongoing costs of that property. Who does that fall to? Especially if there's several siblings. I can tell you that there's always only one sibling who's prepared to carry the can of stuff. The others don't. And the one who wants to live in the house probably is the one who's not prepared to pay. And I've actually probably come across more problems with this than solutions. And in fact, I know a case at the moment where the father's passed away, the mother's inheriting half the house. There's two children have got 25% each, making up the rest. The children want to sell because they want money, and they want to kick the mother out. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that really starts getting quite tricky. So you've got to be very careful when you're creating these immovable assets, and the intentions thereof. I think you've got to be really, really got to be careful about how you put this all together. But Alex, I also wanted to mention a little bit. I mean, we're talking about obviously about wills here, but for many people, they've got their primary home, which is their biggest asset, and then the other biggest asset they actually have are retirement funds. And that, of course, it's very important to point out to our listeners, is not governed by your will. That is governed by trustees, and that can be another whole separate thing. I mean, but can you know, if you have minor children, can you recommend or to the trustees for them to put the funds into the estate or testamentary trust?
Yeah, I mean, as a standard, if you're doing your will, updating your will, put a clause in that says to my trustees, if you're going to determine, because it's the trustee's discretion, if you're going to determine that X and Y amounts of money is going to go to my children, please put it in this testamentary trust I'm creating. So that's a request. To enhance the request and fortify it, a lot of funds that we work with, the big ones, now allow you to indicate that when you're doing your beneficiary to indicate that you would like it to also go to testamentary trust. And we've found when you do both those things, we have not had a situation where the trustees have said, okay, we're not going to pay it to the guardian, we're going to put it into the testamentary trust. We just need to comply with some Pension Fund Act requirements. And sometimes we have to split out the trust and manage it in a the retirement money in a separate a set of accounts. Just so the trustees can be satisfied that you're meeting all of the obligations. But I would say it's a two-prong. It's not just your will, it's when you're doing the beneficiary nomination. Say, I want that. Be clear.
But also just for the benefit of the listeners, is just to also be aware that yes, you could have a will with a testamentary trust, but a retirement fund, certainly the large players in the industry also have beneficiary funds. So those are, if there isn't a testamentary trust to be paid to, and the children are still minors, this money can be paid to a beneficiary fund and managed along the same lines where the funds are paid to the guardian to support the child. So I think it's important to know that that does exist, and it's very important if you have a retirement fund to go find out what your options are with your HR manager. So I think for all those moms who've been contacting me, that's sort of what I've been saying. I'm saying look at your will, look at testamentary trust, but also go find out what is happening to your retirement fund, and if there is a beneficiary fund as an option.
And ask how the trustees of late have made decisions, looking at their recent decisions. Did they determine it's your beneficiary fund, testamentary trust? Go ask. They generally use a framework, a decision tree framework, and that'll tell you how it'll work.
But it's really important. If this is worrying you, if this is something, which it should be, to be perfectly honest, it should be worrying you. You should be thinking about your kids. These are some of the things that you need to start taking seriously. And I think, Alex, probably the most important thing for me is getting good advice. It is complex. The minute you start opening this, it's a can of worms. I mean, if we had to have a Q&A right now, we'd have like 100 questions. They'd all be of different, everyone's different. Everyone's got different situations. So I wanted to chat and end off maybe just about the cost of getting good advice and then also the cost of winding up the estates. It's shocking actually how much fees there are involved. I mean, apart from estate duty, you've got executive fees, you've got CGT, and then of course the cost of running this testamentary trust. So this is obviously where capital legacy comes in because this is what you guys do, but maybe just give us a little bit of a sense of what would it actually cost someone to put something together that they know that they're comfortable with at the end of the day.
I mean, let's just work with some broad percentages. So you're talking about 4% to administer the estate. Again, everything's negotiable or insurable. In capital legacies world, it's insurable. Otherwise, with your attorney, it might be negotiable. When it gets to the trust, you're looking at about between 0.75% to 1.5% per year.
Of the assets.
And that's before the asset management fees, say it's with X and Y asset management house. And that's got to be paid for in cash. And where the additional cost comes in, and this is why we always say rather insure or indemnify the fees, because say you've got money in a unit trust on behalf of the beneficiary. The trustee needs to get paid each year. So what do? You sell some of the units. And then the price of the units goes up and you trigger CGT. So it just, despite the tax situation of the testamentary trust, so it becomes this kind of circular snowball effect, just trying to get the trustees paid. But at the same breath, you know, you've got to pay for someone to be there. I mean, if you think about you as a parent administering the money for your child, getting everything from groceries to school fees, it costs a professional's time. You know, you've got to pay some out. So I would work on between 0.75 and 1.5%.
And then so you need to either have liquidity in your estate that can fund that, or what is the insurable part of it?
So the insurable part is if companies like ourselves do the wind up the estate as the executor or administer the trust as the trustees, those fees can be insured via a policy you took while you were alive. No questions asked, no need for cash. Everyone can carry on. And then it doesn't have those second, third, fourth order effects. And also, it helps in your conversation. I mean, if I sit with beneficiaries and, you know, you're trying to discuss a budget and you go, ooh, I've got that 50,000 rand that needs to get paid. Your interests aren't really aligned. You know, you both should be fighting to maximize the trust capital for the beneficiary, not one trying to take a fee from it, albeit it might be worth it.
So if I take out a policy, so I could take out an insurance policy effectively that, you know, when I die, that insurance policy kicks in and it guarantees me, it covers all the costs of winding up that estate. And if I have a testamentary trust, it will cover the running of those costs until that trust, because you've set an age, at what age the children will no longer be. And so all of that is covered.
All of that. And there's some you know, good policies out there will also take care of those other cash costs that we'd never see coming. The advertising costs, the master's fees, some other things that will kill off the capital.
And I was actually thinking about that as well. One of the other things is having some cash available immediately. So this is actually something my husband and I have been discussing recently, because we're busy redoing our wills, is, you know, for the first 6 months, it takes a long time often for an estate to get wound up. But generally speaking, accounts get frozen, all of that, and you've got bills to pay, things like that. So also having some sort of cash injection is also really, I think, a really worthwhile thing to have as well. Just to, and again, you know, you're thinking about your children, you just want to make sure that things can, school fees can still be paid that term, those kind of things.
That's exactly it. And you can't just rely on that big life cover, because if a life cover is 3 or 4 million rand, you would know it's not going to pay out tomorrow. Mm. It's going to, you know, be looked at and get paid out in 2 or 3 weeks. So, and it might even go to the wrong person. So that's why those insurance policies we're talking about, good ones, have a little bit of cash that pay within 48 hours just to allow for things to happen.
Yeah, just so that bills can be paid. But Alex, I think that's been very, very useful. And I was sort of, when you were talking, I was thinking about like what I wanted to kind of leave with listeners. And for me, it really is, and this is how I approach it. I approach it as a what if, what, or how do I want my family to look if something happens to me? What bills do I want paid? What do I want to be able to leave them? How do I want it to be? And I think then you sit down with an expert and you say, this is what I want it to look like. And I think that that would be a really, really good starting point. Just sit, have an idea of what you want to leave and who you want to leave it to. You know, I want my family to, like, exactly that. I want my family's bills to be paid the day if something happens to me. They don't have to suddenly worry about things, all of those things. And I think that's a really good starting point. Then sit down with someone who's an expert to make sure that it happens.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. That's exactly it.
Well, great. Thanks you very much, Alex. And I hope to touch base with you again soon.
Thanks, Maya.